This is an ABC podcast.
ABC Sport. Grandstand Cricket.
There you go.
That's it for the day.
You can hear the bales.
And that is Stumps.
This is Grandstand at Stumps.
On ABC Radio.
ABC Sport Digital Radio. And the ABC Listen app.
It was framed up as a crucial day for England, not just in this test, but in the context of the series. Only once in 150 years of test cricket has a side come from 2-0 down to win, and England are seemingly about to find themselves on the wrong side of history. The Aussies bossing the game at Stumps on day three. England 6 for 134. The deficit is 43, and that it's just to make the Aussies bat for a second time. Welcome to Grandstand at Stumps. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Alongside me on the boundary's edge, former Australian coach and cricketer Darren Lehman, Jason Gillespie, former Australian cricketer and world-renowned coach. Oh, not the day that England had hoped for, and really it all fell apart under lights at the end of the third day.
We knew it was going to be hard work that last session. Australia got it right. At tee, they probably restocked because they didn't get it right in their six overs pre-tee. They got too full with Stark. And too full with a new ball. And they hit their lengths and it went to work. It was pretty special with Nessa getting a couple of wickets and doing the right thing.
Michael Nessa to join us shortly, but let's go inside the England camp and our BBC colleague, Henry Moran.
Well, Marcus Trzaskowski is with me, England's batting coach. How do you sum up the situation?
Not ideal, was it? We're in a bit of a predicament, really. We've got to find a way in the morning to come out strong and get a partnership going. Obviously, hopefully, while the sun's out. And try and utilise as much as we can with the guys who are left in the shed. So, get up level with their total and then see what we can post to obviously try and get ourselves in a position to try and win the game.
There was quite some bafflement from many about England's bowling tactics today. Can you talk us through the plans?
The plans are simple, aren't they? I think whether we executed the plans in terms of what we wanted to do, probably not as much as we have done in other games and in other sessions or other series that we've played. So, it's something that we can always improve on and obviously be better. Plans are very different compared to how you execute them. So if you don't hit the areas that you need to hit, then of course, obviously it makes it quite challenging.
That partnership between Scott Boland and Mitchell Stark particularly was challenging. How does the team rise itself in that situation? Because it felt like the game and the deflation at that point was significant.
Yeah, that's tough. When they get partnerships going, obviously you're in the heat and they're starting to get ahead of the game. Of course, that's really tough. The bowlers are getting tired. The ball's quite soft at that point. It's tough. Yeah, that is challenging. Obviously, they played really well and put themselves in a position of strength really going into our second innings. And of course, something that we can try and emulate as much as we can do whenever we play against them. Or learn from what they tried to do. So a couple of their guys played well, they got good partnerships. We maybe didn't bowl quite as well as we needed to, and we're in the position we are.
You speak about learning, but it feels as though there's some familiar dismissals, chasing wide deliveries, two caught and bowls as well. What do you put it down to?
I don't think really chasing many wide ones today. I think, I thought they bowled well, and we nicked a couple of balls, and it is what it is, but our game is very much like we're trying to apply pressure to opposition. There's no doubt about that, and we do it well at times, and other times, when it comes off in the wrong way and it goes against us, then of course it's challenging. But caught and bowls happen. I don't think there's another way you can say, right, that's part of bad play or bad sort of technique or what you're trying to do. I think it's just sometimes they do happen. We've had a couple in this game and one obviously in the last game. But we can always be better. We can always improve our style of play and be smarter at different times, different occasions. And we're always looking to do that.
This always felt as though this was going to be, if you like, the project's big test, this tour. We're barely 5 days in and there's problems. What do you put it down to?
Well, we've just not been good enough for long enough, probably, in different areas. We need to score more runs. We need to take more wickets. As simple as that. Be disciplined when we bowl, be disciplined when we bat, all the different things that come along in different games of cricket. The pitch at Perth was very different to what we had here. Took one very special innings from the opposition to challenge and win the game that they did. And obviously here, we thought we had a good total, just probably didn't quite get things right going into it in the last couple of days.
And just finally, preparation has been a word that has been discussed an awful lot, and a lot of practice in the nets, a lot of time facing pink balls, if you like, in that situation is one thing, but it is another thing being out in the middle and the effort and the time and those hours upon hours of intense cricket out in the middle. Is that a worry that England haven't had that much of it coming into this series?
No, not at all. Not for me. I think the way that it's done, preparation nowadays, is not done necessarily by playing three shield games as it would be here. Like going back in the years gone before, you know, tours are a lot more condensed. Cricket is a lot more condensed nowadays. It's the same when Australia come to England. It's the same when India go to England. It's when we go to opposition countries. We do exactly the same. So there's no real difference. It's just the way it is. Fair enough. We haven't played, obviously, the quality of cricket we wanted to, but it's not down to our preparation.
And what would you say to England fans who are understandably disappointed?
Oh, listen, I think, you know, great support again. We really cherish, obviously, the support that they come with and obviously give us as much as they can. You know, we've been put on the back foot and we haven't quite managed to sort of be the way we needed to be. And we've done it well in different stages, but just probably not for long enough. So stick with it, keep enjoying it. Obviously, it's a great country and they, you know, love their cricket here. The atmosphere has been amazing. Hopefully we can sort of, you know, make it better and be better in the next couple of games and tomorrow.
Marcus, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Marcus Trescothick, the England batting coach there with Henry Moran on the BBC. This is Grandstand at Stumps on ABC Sport. Corbin Middlemass alongside Jason Gillespie and Darren Lehman. Just repeating, England 6 for 135. They still trail the test by 43 runs. And that's just to make Australia bat for a second time. The man who really triggered the collapse tonight under lights is Michael Nisa. And I'm pleased to say he joins us on ABC Sport. Michael, first of all, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
So you get two wickets, the first of them caught and bowled, Ollie Pope out. And essentially, up until stumps, England lost 5 for 44 from that particular stage. How did you do it?
Yeah, I know. We just seem to get wickets at the right time, especially at night time. Things to move real fast. And Starkey put on a show there then, and supported by Bowen, who bowled fantastically.
You bowled fantastically too. You're able to get two wickets, both caught and bowled. I think Rick Finlay did the stats for us during the night. You haven't got too many caught and bowled, have you, in your career? And yet you were able to pick up a couple there at test level as a way to get involved in the match.
Yeah, I dropped that first one and I was like, oh, bugger, I better catch the next two. But yeah, I haven't got too many. But the way I was bowling stump to stump, is I'm always in for a chance for a caught and bowled, so I was looking for it.
And just on that one, you mentioned the drop catch. You looked at your left hand a lot after that. Did you cop any injury as a result of it?
Yeah, my track record with broken fingers isn't great, so it's a little bit sore, but it'll be all right.
Wow. So is it broken?
No, it'll be all right.
No, it'll be all right.
Ness, what were the discussions at tea, mate? Because obviously you and Starkey took the new ball for that little period before tea. They got off to a little bit of a fly. Was there an adjustment there or a discussion in the change rooms?
Yeah, definitely. We probably went searching a bit too much, a bit full, tried to do a bit too much. We know if we just hold our length, they'll come at us and give us the chances. So after tea, we recouped, and I think we did that well. We just held our length and went back to test cricket of being patient.
And is there enough on that length that you talk about to just in that particular last session under the lights?
100%. It seems to do nothing, and all of a sudden, you get enough balls in the right area, it seems to either jag or kick. We saw Bowen at the end there, just got the ball to talk, and so did Starkey.
And then conversely, in the morning session, or the first session, sorry, 2 o'clock, it seems to be a little bit slower?
Yeah, definitely. I think also we started with that softer ball. The harder ball seems to kick a little bit, but not as much as the night time. So you definitely have to capitalise on these night sessions.
The heat, obviously, during the day, so it felt like you guys did a great job at being able to avoid as much time out there as possible. And Mitchell Stark in particular, boy, didn't he bat well.
Yeah, that was the whole plan today, was try to keep them out as long as possible, get into that night session with the harder ball, and he did a fantastic job on that. Patience, and then supported by Boland, who did, I think, underrated how well he went. The role he played was fantastic.
Sorry, mate. And the batting-wise, I mean, obviously you took him on a bit yesterday or last night. Was that a plan or just happened like that?
It just happened. I know for myself I got to look to be positive. Not reckless, but positive, because that gets me in better positions for defence. I think Kez is the same mould.
Yeah, you're both mad. Anyway, more importantly, how are the twins?
Yeah, they're making me mad.
How old are they?
They two now, and my eldest is four. He's in the crowd. He's wide awake still, so he's going to be a gremlin tomorrow morning. Lucky I don't have to deal with that.
Space across 4 years, you obviously come in and play here, having not played a test since December 2022, yeah. And yet you've been in and around the squad, it feels like, most of that time. Well, yeah. Take us back to day one. When did you know that you were going to get a start?
Probably 20 minutes before warm-up, but I knew they were going to check the wicket and see what sort of wicket it was going to be, and I'm very fortunate I got the gig.
You're a Queenslander, of course, so I imagine you would have been coming to this ground growing up at different stages following the Australian cricket team, and here you are in your own backyard representing the country in Test cricket. Must be pretty cool.
Oh, it's amazing. I've had great memories here. Buff as my coach, junior days, well, a lot of sprays. it would have sprayed me for playing that shot, and I'm sure I'm going to get it.
I spoke you up there anyway, mate.
So I obviously didn't learn, but anyway. I love this ground, and the crowd is amazing.
Well done, mate. Yeah, fantastic. Awesome. Cheers. Great day.
We'll let you run. Michael, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well done, Ness.
Michael Neeser there from the Australian cricket team. Appreciate his time on the back of a sensational day by the Australians. And so it felt like at the start of the day they had their nose in front. And by the end of the day, they've got England well and truly on the ropes. So 6 for 134, England at close. The deficit is still 43, just to make the Australians bat again. And it was Michael Neeser who picked up two wickets in quick succession, both caught and bowled. And as a result, England ended up losing 5 for 44 after losing that wicket through Ollie Pope. So he spooned one back to Neeser. Really, it started the rot, Buff, and it didn't get any better.
Even from the tee when they got it wrong, none for 45 off 6, weren't they? Mm.
Yep.
So then to control the game from them, what's that, 6 for 90 roughly in the space of 29 overs was outstanding bowling. As Michael said, pull the length back, don't go searching. And that's what they probably did that first 6 overs. They want to go bang, bang and see if they could get more all of a sudden. And then they just got it right. They got the length right. And it was really actually Brendan Doggett that came on after. So he only bowled a couple overs. Yeah. And Michael Neeser that just actually slowed the scoring, got the lengths right, and then went, oh, start bowling, we'll do that. And then all of a sudden, bang, bang, and then it's just started to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they managed the bowlers really well there, Steve Smith. I just thought it was excellent test match bowling. We've seen so much short stuff, so much inconsistency. And we see, hit that shoebox on a length over and over. There's enough in this Gabba surface, and the Australians absolutely proved that.
And it's at night, isn't it? I mean, absolutely. At night they were very, very good. They batted long enough to get it to the night. England bowled too short again.
Yep.
They had to get those four wickets. If you can't get those four wickets in the space of the hour, you're always chasing the game. And ended up batting until lunch and then batting another hour and a bit. Yeah. I mean, that's a long time in the space of the game. Remember, there's only 25 overs roughly every session, 24 because of the overrates. Mm. So you're not going to get too far in front either.
Yeah.
So you need to actually somehow speed up the game. They need to be batting quite quickly at the start of the day.
If you look at the session-by-session breakdown, so two wickets each have fallen in the first and second sessions in the first 3 days.
Right.
So
oh, wow.
Two wickets, first session, day one. Two wickets, second session, day one. Same repeats, day two, day three. And yet in the night session, 5 wickets on day one, 3 wickets last night, and yet there was also 4 drop catches, and then 6 wickets tonight. So all the action seemingly happening under lights. And tonight was only the first occasion in the test match out of the 3 days that the ball was even hard and new.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because the ball's still going to be pretty hard tomorrow morning. They're going to be fresh, ready to go, because they need to get these two out. Because these two could easily bat a session. Stokes and Jax, they're accomplished players, and they actually, now they've got them still behind. If they pick these two up in the first hour, she'll be over by lunch, right, or dinner, whatever we bloody call it.
Yeah.
You know, but if they don't, these two will go, oh, just might be able to create something special. So Stokes is the big one, we know that, but Jax is a very accomplished player. If you get them in the first hour, those two, the rest will just slog.
Boof, do you think these two will come out pretty hard tomorrow, or do you think they'll take their time and get themselves in?
Great question, because they'll look at the weather. There is a bit of weather about tomorrow. By all reports, what is it, 90% humidity?
Yeah, 32 degrees, medium chance of showers, most likely in the evening. Possible afternoon thunderstorm.
How are we going to be pre-show?
Oh, dear.
UV very high, 90% humidity.
Anyway, if it's beautiful day and it's not going to rain, I think they'll play baseball. I think they'll try and take the game on and get a lead and win.
Yep.
If it looks like it's going to rain and there could be thunder and on and off, I reckon they'll block.
Right.
I reckon they'll say, let's keep them out there. You just never know. You know what I mean? And it's play 2 hours. So I think it'll just depend on how they come in the morning. I think they'll say, right, we're all in, and we're going to try and take the game and bat 50 overs and go at 5 and 6 and over and get 300, and then all of a sudden, you know, Australia chasing 200, yep. 200 to win, that might be a bit of a nipper.
We haven't seen any indication yet that England's able to adapt and play a different way or the way they go about it. I mean, this is, you know, wickets have fallen pretty regularly right throughout their batting displays throughout the series so far.
Do you think they tried tonight, though? I think they actually tried to actually stay in. They've got some good deliveries.
Yeah.
I mean, they chased a couple of half volleys, but they weren't big drives like they were in the first innings. They actually tried to not get out.
We've seen some more leaving, yeah, haven't we? Mm. And just looking to punch rather than these big booming drives, as Buff said.
What the Australians did do is they were able to adapt, and the tail was able to bat time and really put themselves into a dominant position, of which the middle order yesterday had opportunities to do that and really let England back into the game. But Mitchell Stark, 77, batting with the likes of Michael Nisa and then Scott Boland and even Brendan Doggett at the end. And it was an incredible-looking scorecard where Stark top-scored with 77. The lower score was 13. Doggett, yeah, who was the last man out. Every player made double digits. Even the Sundries got to 22. So 511 all out, and the Aussies 177 on top after the first innings.
Corby, I reckon at the start of the day, if the Australians mapped out what their ideal day would look like, I think this was it. Boof.
Probably another 50 runs and start bowling after tea. The last 2 hours. Yeah. Probably that's it. But having said that,
pretty close.
You've got the extra wickets because you bowled more at night. That's so right. And going back to day one, what are you thinking now? Should they slog those extra runs or should they bowl at night? Because all the wickets are falling at night with a hard ball.
It's a really
had
good
one
point.
Opportunity to bowl with a hard ball and they didn't take it.
Yeah. The bigger picture for England, and I know that there's still some cricket to be played here, but it's so tempting to jump ahead. I mean, this is, as Henry Moran put to Marcus Trescothick, this is the centrepiece of the Bazball project. It sort of justified every decision they made around selection or whatever it's been over the last couple of years that, hey, we're doing this with Australia in mind. We're doing this because we're going to take this person to the Ashes or we want to succeed down there, so we're going to play in a particular way. We're going to stick with certain players because we feel like they'll be effective in Australian conditions. We are 5 days into the series and there's a chance that early tomorrow morning, basically the series could be over. Australia jumped 2-0 on top. And England would have to be a once-in-150-year team if they are to try and reverse that.
I think the word you've used there a few times, we feel. They feel things. There's no evidence. They've picked players on potential. They've picked players on attributes. What they haven't done is pick players on evidence. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be fascinating because, you know, it's not over yet. So what will happen is if they do lose, it'll be a massive change. I mean, one way, we said at the start of the series, didn't we, whoever doesn't come out on top in this series is going to be changed in all cricket departments. So it's going to be fascinating what happens. And that just happens with big Ashes series. So they've done it. I think one of the things that they've forgotten about is they have forgotten about the county system and actually watching some of the players, I think. And some of those players that I've seen throughout the year, having spent some time there, there's some really good players there, but I haven't spoken to anyone, so... And why would I? They're playing Australia. Mm. So why would I speak to anyone?
Yeah, but you're the coach of a county team.
That's right.
You would expect that you'd have some conversation with someone to say, hey, we got this guy. This guy's coming through the system. This is what it turns out to be.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah. What about the guys you've played against?
Yeah. You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Nothing.
Not a thing. And in fact, I
find that staggering.
I complained once about Safe made 1,600 runs, a young left-hander, that I haven't spoken to any selector. And then I got an email. Well, you can ring us. And I'm going...
That's not your job.
That's not my job.
I'm with you, Buff. I'm fine. That's staggering.
Yeah. That is incredible. And I mean, you apply it to the state system here, and you think, well, we only have six of them.
Our selectors are getting around more
always,
and more. They're
always.
Actually always there.
So whenever I'm at a Shield game, there's one of the three are always
and
there.
And we do get into the selectors, don't we? I mean, we're always debating selection, as we have with Nathan Lyon this game. But one thing I give them all... Ever since my day, when I played, you always saw selectors, regardless.
Yep.
They were always there.
And in recent times, in my previous roles with South Australia, there was either always a selector there for a Shield game, or you would have communication with one of the selectors or Andrew McDonald. That was consistent.
The fallout's going to be harsh. I mean, if England fall 2-0 down, and I'm sure we'll pick it all apart tomorrow, that this is an Ashes series, as we said, that they're primed for and... 5 and a bit days in, it could basically have already slipped away. And the other thing to keep in mind, Pat Cummins hasn't played a game yet. So Australia's skippers, on the shelf. He's expected to come back and play in Adelaide.
Same as Josh Hazlewood.
No Hazlewood. They leave Lyon out here. And for all the questions about this Australian team and the stage that they're in, they could jump 2-0 up in home conditions.
And if Australia win here, it's an amazing achievement. Missing and take Lyon out as well.
Yeah,
so
yep,
three
absolutely.
Of the golden four. Yep. Are out. I mean, that's an amazing achievement for a bowling unit to get the 20 wickets. But if they do go up 2-0, then it's going to be all eyes on, you know, what's happening on the England camp. What are they going to do? What are they going to change? Because it could just all implode.
Yeah.
Where the Australian side, you know, they've got to actually, there is a few holes there. We know that. You've got to give more opportunities to different players. They're doing that with Jake Weatherald.
Yep.
But also, I think what I've seen is, wow, they're hard to replace. Hazlewood, Cummins. Cool. Yeah. Lyon, very hard to replace. So we've got to get some depth and we've got to get them playing.
Darren Lehman alongside Jason Gillespie. My name's Corbin Middlemass. This is Grandstand at Stumps on ABC Sport. There was a little humorous moment in the final session where, unfortunately, umpire Shafiq Dulasakat found himself in the hot spot. Scott Boland was bowling to Harry Brook. The Aussies were pressing home their advantage, and here's how it played out in the space of consecutive balls.
Boland tries again. Brook is forward. He's nicking. Carey appeals. The cordon goes up. The finger follows. Brook's out for 15. England 5 for 123. And Harry Brook wants to have a look before he departs.
Okay, looks like a gap between bat and ball. And oh, bat is hitting
the plate. He's missed it by about 6 inches.
Really not here just once. Again, Gavin.
You could park your car in the gap between the ball and the bat there. That was a huge gap. Boland to Brook. The very next ball. He's nicking behind. Shafidullahsakat keeps his finger down this time. The Aussies are so confident. Just about every player's teed it up. Smith turns to the umpire and says, let's have a look. Well, the last one hit the back leg.
Okay, there's a clear spike when the ball is next to the...
And for umpire Shafidullah, he's given him out when he wasn't. And he's given him not out when he was. And he was out the second time, Harry Brook. You just knew for certain the second time it went up, and a big peel for caught behind. There was no way the umpire was putting his finger up there.
No, he wasn't. And I'll tell you what, Harry Brook was very sheepish that second one. You could tell the first one, his body language said it all. He didn't get anywhere near it, and so it proved. But that second one, he had a very sheepish look on his face. I was wondering whether he was going to actually walk.
What do you think, Buff? It's never easy, is it, the umpiring game? But he got one wrong, which won't look good on reflection. And then the very next ball, regardless of whatever he thought.
That's what Darius is there for, isn't it?
So to remove the howlers.
Yeah. And it's remove the howlers. It's no problems.
Yep.
The Aussies have been really good at it in recent years, haven't they? And that hasn't always been the case, but it feels like they've got a very clear system. The cordon gets together, Carey's opinion, the bowler's opinion. The fielder, a point or square leg, comes in and they have a little conference, and then all of a sudden the T-signal goes up. So it feels like something they've perfected over time.
Yeah, and that's something you definitely speak about. I mean, Buff, you would know, being a coach of a national side, you talk about that in your pre-meetings, and whether it's your captain and your assistant coach or your analyst, you discuss what your process is in that space. And certainly Steve Smith, he's got that down pat.
Just repeating the story of the day. So Australia resumed the day at 6 for 378. At that particular stage, they led the test match by 40-odd runs and they pressed home that advantage as the tail certainly wagged. Mitchell Starc with 77, McNeisa out for 16, Boland 21 not out, Carey for 63 and Doggett for 13. 511 all out with about 40 minutes to go in the second session. The lead was 177 on the first innings. England at one stage in the night session were 1 for 90. And at Stumps, they found themselves 6 for 134. So they lost 5 for 44 to complete the day from that point on. Ollie Pope caught and bowled Michael Neeser, spooned one back to him on 26. Crawley likewise out for 44. Joe Root was out for 15. He was caught, made contact with the ground trying to drive. He also nicked the ball on the way through off Starc's bowling for 15. Harry Brook out for 15, as we just heard, caught the keeper off the bowling of Scott Boland. And out for 4 before close, Jamie Smith caught nicking behind the keeper off the bowling of Mitchell Starc. So Starc with a couple of wickets, 2 to Boland, 2 to Neeser, and the Aussies well on top at Stumps on the third day of the second Ashes test right here at the Gabba. So that is it. Stumps, England 6 for 134, still trailing the test by 43 runs. Thank you, Buff.
Thank you, Corby.
Thanks, Diz.
Thanks, Corby. Thanks, Buffer.
We'll hear from you tomorrow. My name's Corbin Middlemass, signing off on behalf of our entire team. Thanks for all your work throughout the day, everybody involved. And thanks to you for listening throughout on Grandstand Cricket. We'll be back tomorrow. Our coverage follows National Grandstand from 12 noon Australian Eastern Daylight Time.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.